Onu kehanetin ilan hasya kehanem cana şalaka. Yapacak şuğun yeni tam yeni tasma işi görü benim. Bak. Nama şeştan manan api şapki putras rupam rupam tez yagu cam hulu kurin maturin goşta din. Radha kundam giri buram ho radha madhra sham prapto yasya pratita kripaya şi gurum tam yasusmi. Vande ham Shri Guru Shri Atas Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Srupam Sagrujatam Sahagana Raghunatam Nitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sarvadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Tetanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakavanditam Sajivam Shantakaram Pujagashayanam Padmanabham Suresham Vishvadharam Gaganasadrisham Megavarnam Shubhangam Lakshmi Kantam Kamalanayanam Yogi Nanagam Yam Vande Vishnam Bhavabhayaharam Sarvalokaikanatham Hare Krishna Hare Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In my travels, started many years ago, but recently in my travels, I've been speaking on Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, as Mahabharata, spoken by Bhishma, grandfather Bhishma, to Yudhishthira Maharaj. So this is a way to meditate. This has gone off. Goes like that. Okay. This is a way to meditate on the qualities of Vishnu, who is Krishna, but particularly how he interacts with the material world which we are stuck in, and how he helps us to get out, and his various avatars in this material world. So I'll continue with that. Now on name 151, which also occurred earlier already. Several of the names in Vishnu Sahasranam, they appear more than once. So this name is Vishva Yoni. Vishva means the universe, and Yoni means the womb. So that's generally translated as the cause of the universe, although all of these names can have multiples. Sri Madhvacharya stated that Every name in Vishnu Sahasranam can have 1,000 meanings, but there are some primary meanings. He is the cause of the universe. That was already discussed by the commentators in the previous entry for Vishnu. And in this time, they put it around the other way, that the universe is his womb, in as much as he is born in this world. Although he has intrinsically nothing to do with this world, he's aloof from transcendental to, he is born in this world, he is the cause of all causes, but it is as if the world has caused him, in as much as the situation of the world, of the jivas forgetting him, out of his compassion for them, he feels himself obliged to enter this world to uplift the devotees, especially to uplift the devotees, and to quell the disturbances caused by the non-devotees toward his devotees. So he appears in this world, and he appears to comply with this world. Largely, he appears as if he is taking shelter of this world. He lies down on the earth. He takes food which is produced from this world. So it appears as if he, just like a child is within the womb, and takes all shits from the womb of the mother. So he also takes shelter, particularly of Bhumi Mata, who is his wife also. He is within this universe, although he is intrinsically beyond it. The next name, 152, Punaravastuhu. which means who again and again resides. Vasu gives the idea of residing or existing. So the idea is that he again enters the universe, and he again and again enters the hearts of the jivas who have forgotten him. That is his great kindness. His kindness is mentioned in previous names. That's alluded to. Sahishnu was one name just came. He's very tolerant. Even though the jivas are forgetting him, he's very tolerant of them and goes with them life after life to try to help them. So he makes this elaborate arrangement of the whole material world to facilitate the perverse desires of the jivas, but he again and again enters as the antaratma, or the paramatma, the super soul of all his creations and all the living beings within the creations. And in this way, he maintains and always, in, out of his mercy, always endeavors to uplift his devotees. So also important to understand is that he is within the heart of even the great demigods, who are not independent gods. They're also, even though they appear to be very powerful, and this can be said of any powerful person in the world, all their power comes from Krishna. Their very life comes from Krishna. He is, because he is with them, they have life, intelligence, power, and all this, as we find in Bhagavad Gita, this tejas tejas vinamaham buddhir buddhimahatam asmi, all these statements of Krishna. He is the vitality of people. He is Paurushangrishu. He is the ability or the manliness in man. So whatever abilities we may have, we should know that's only because Krishna very kindly resides with us and gives us whatever we have. Another meaning of Punarvasu is that again and again he creates a residence. So in this way, he again and again recreates the world after massive complete devastation, when even the Brahma dies and all the universes are withdrawn into the body of Vishnu. So again and again, they come out, and in this way, by Krishna's creation. Yes, he's also creating the residence for the jivas, and he's that function of organizing all the ingredients in the universe is done by Brahma, who is empowered by Krishna to do so. So the next name is of one of the very famous avatars of Vishnu. Name 153 is Upendra. And name 154, Upendra is a very well-known name, and number 154 is Vamana, which is an even better known name of the Lord who has appeared as a transcendental dwarf within this world. Who could imagine that this supremely mighty, powerful Lord who has been glorified in all these names for his mighty feats, is a dwarf. Of course, another name for this dwarf is Triviklam, which means that he takes three mighty steps. So he's not as insignificant or incapable as he might look. So Upendra, the generally understood meaning of that, is that he is the younger brother of Indra. He appeared due to Aditi's pleas. We all know the path of Vamana Deva, and I've spoken on this extensively, so I won't speak on this now. Although Vamana Dvadashi is upcoming, we're all getting excited about Radhashtami coming up, but shortly after that is also Vamana Dvadashi. And I've had the great good fortune to many times visit the place where Vamanadeva appeared in this world, or at least the representation of that place on this earth, on the bank of the Narmada. We find in Bhagavatam that the place where Bharat was performing sacrifices under the direction of Shukracharya is called Bhrigukach. So that is, nowadays that town is known as Bharuch in Gujarat. So I've had the good fortune to visit that place several times, and we have regular preaching going on there. Upendra, the younger brother of Indra. So the younger brother is supposed to serve the elder brother, and certainly Upendra does. Generally it's thought that the elder brother will be the most powerful, as of course Ram was in relation to his brothers. For instance, Balaram is, at least some people think that, appears to be more powerful than Krishna, although Srila Prabhupada said that actually Krishna is more powerful than Balaram because Balaram has to rest on Krishna. But in this case, clearly, Upendra is more powerful than Indra. Even though he appeared as a charming little boy, he very soon expanded his form to cover the whole universe, which gives us another meaning of the name Upendra. Upa means, it's a prefix which has several meanings. In this instance, it means one who means following or coming after. So Upendra means the younger brother of Indra. But another meaning is Upuri, above. So he's also superior to Indra, even though he comes after Indra. He is superior in terms of the worldly situation. Indra is superior to Vamanadeva, just like in terms of the worldly situation, etiquette. Balaram is superior to Krishna. Yudhishthira is superior to Krishna. But intrinsically, Vishnu is superior to everyone. So he is Paramparush, the Supreme Person, so that includes everyone else. So why say, why make the particular point that he's superior to Indra? Well, this point should be understood, because generally when we see a great person in this world, we think, oh, how great they are. We may be dazzled into thinking that they are the greatest person that can exist. And certainly Indra is very powerful. We cannot imagine his power as he, with his thunderbolt, he breaks mountains and kills demons. And from our perspective, it might seem, from the worldly perspective, it might seem that there's no one more powerful than Indra, because although Brahma and Shiva are far superior to Indra, they generally don't move about in the world much. They're more reserved. Whereas Indra, he's the king. Indra means king. So he's actively involved in overseeing all the demigods, and a king has to be active. Sleeping king is bad news for the citizens. So he appears to be most powerful, so that is emphasized, that Krishna, he is much superior to Indra, even though Indra appears superior to Krishna. Even Indra himself is overcome by that illusion, which he very kindly smashes in a very polite way, you can say, not by challenging Indra, but by just thwarting Indra's attempts to drown, his actually offensive attempt to drown the inhabitants of Vrindavan. That's recalled in the Nectar of Devotion, that Krishna thinks that when Indra sent the Sangvataka clouds to attack Vrindavan, Krishna thought to kill Indra. But then he thought, why should I bother? Indra's so insignificant. Why should I bother killing him? So although Indra thinks himself so significant, his significance is very little compared to Krishna. So all these names, they help us to see everything in the actual perspective, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and we are all his eternal servants. Even the great demigods, Yam Brahma, Rudra, Maruta, Stundanti, Vidyaishtavai, all the great demigods, Brahma, Shiva, the wind gods, Indra, all offer prayers to this person, to Krishna. So this is very pleasing for devotees to hear and gives us impetus to surrender to him, knowing that he is the proper person to surrender to, who is capable of giving us full shelter. Whereas the demigods, they cannot, because they themselves are subject to the conditions of the material world. Number 154 is Vamana, which literally means a dwarf. So this is, I personally find this Vamana Leela, among all the avatars, of course, Krishna is to Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the source of all avatars. So there is the most charming of all forms. Of course, Rama is very charming with his pastimes, but this pastime of Vamana, how he in jest cheats his devotee Bali Maharaj, and having taken everything Bali Maharaj, he gives himself to Bali Maharaj. There's one statement in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that, what is that? I'm just forgetting that now. Krishna Shobhav Bhakte Na Loy Aparad Alpo Seva Bahumane Atta Prajanta Prasad. That Krishna's nature is not to accept the offenses of his devotees. He doesn't see any offense. But if there's a little service by the devotee, he considers it to be very great, and in return gives him his very self to that devotee. So Bali Maharaj was an offender, inasmuch as he upset the universal order, and threw Indra out of the heavenly planets. That's how Krishna has to come. Ete chaṁ śakalākṁ sat. Krishna's to Bhagavan Swami. Indrāri vyākṛnam lokam vidhiyanti yuge yuge. Krishna comes. Krishna, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, comes in every age specifically to relieve the distress of the demigods headed by Indra, who become disturbed by the demons. So Bali, in the universal sense, was an offender. He was a criminal, in one sense, although in another, if a king can, of course, in Vedic culture, if one king can overpower another, then the kingdom is his. He can take over someone else's kingdom. That's considered legitimate, generally. So Bali, he may have been an offender, but Krishna, if there's any trace of offense, someone might say there's an offense. Of course, we shouldn't say there's any offense. But even if there's any trace of offense, Krishna doesn't see that, and he sees the attitude of service. Even Bali, he gave a universe. It wasn't a little service. Although for Krishna, a universe is just a mustard seed. But we know ourselves when we're going for collection and donations, people are reluctant even to give a penny, what to speak of all their possessions. So Bali Maharaj gave that. He was tricked into doing it. He was willing to give whatever Vamana wanted. He gave all that he had to Vamana, and ultimately for the third step of Vamana, he put his head. Now you put your foot on my head. He gave himself to Krishna, and reciprocally, Krishna gave him, Vamana gave himself to Bali Maharaj. So this is a very sweet pastime. Another meaning of vamana be understood in this way. Vamiyati tiyajiyati madam balin. So, vama in Bengali say vomi. That means to vomit. So, this literally means who made Bali Maharaj vomit his pride? The name is extrapolated in this way. So, pride is a total disqualification in bhakti. So if there's any pride in Bali Maharaj, that now I'm in such a position, it would be very difficult for anyone not to be proud, having defeated Indra and taken over the heavenly planets and living in total opulence. So it's very difficult not to be proud of one's strength and opulence and fame, but Vamanadeva took it all away from Bali and arrested him, humiliated him, and in this way very kindly took away the pride of Bali Maharaj, and in this way made him qualified to receive Vamana, to have Vamana as his own property, because one who has any pride cannot have Krishna. They have to choose. Another meaning, Vamana means short, but another meaning can be added to that, that he's not only short, but very charming, very beautiful. All the forms of the Lord, they're all very beautiful. Even the hog form and the form which we may think are not very beautiful. But actually, if we see those paintings of the Dashavatar by B.N. Sharma, he's empowered by Krishna, no doubt, to exhibit in painting form the beauty of the various forms. How can a hog be beautiful? It cannot. But this pig, Varaha Deva, is exquisitely beautiful. So all the forms of Vishnu are very beautiful, but some are particularly noted for their beauty. Balaram is particularly noted for his beauty. Mohini Murti is particularly noted. And Vamana also. Very, very beautiful and charming form. So, another meaning, Vatu means brahmachari, student in the Gurukul. So, Vamo Vatutvam Asya Asyati Vamana. Well, he's this little boy. He's not just a little boy. Another quality of him is that he's a Gurukul student. So, he was just like that. We'll see that in his form, the way he's dressed, he's just like a very nice brahmachari. Hare Krishna. That's described in Srimad Bhagavatam, that Yajamana, that refers to Bali Maharaj, is the Yajamana, or the person who had requested the sacrifice on whose behalf it was being performed. Yajamana Pramudito Darshaniyam Manoramam Rupana Rupa Vayavam Tasma Asanam Aharat. The Yajamu Maharaj, he saw this, he's very pleased to see the beautiful form, very darshaniya, well worth looking at, or something that one very much desires to look at, because Manorama, it's very pleasing to the mind. So this describes Vamanadi. Darshaniya Manoramam, very pleasing to the mind, and Darshaniya, well worth seeing, or seeable, not just visible, but something that one would naturally want to see. The eyes will naturally be drawn toward that form, that beautiful Vamana form. So the Yajamana, the Bali Maharaj, is very, very pleased to see this form, and he offered a seat in that assembly with his heart completely captivated by this form of Vamana, he offered Vamana a seat. Another meaning of Vamana, Sarvani Vamani Nayati Iti Vamana, one who bestows all the desires of the devotees, or who produces joy in those who see him. So these are some of the meanings of Vamana, and there's another very interesting meaning, or astonishing meaning, which comes up in name 155. But I can take questions now. How about that? Ramanan Prabhu? Questions, comments, discussion? Hare Krishna? We all there?
Hare Bo, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you. We're able to hear me, okay.
Am I unmuted?
Yes. You are unmuted. I'm sorry. It's hard for me to unmute myself. But I've unmuted everybody. We actually have 23 devotees on all the different platforms. But please, anybody that would like to add anything, go ahead.
Maharaj, I'll ask a question. You had mentioned in the kindness that Vamanadeva was showing to King Bali. You mentioned that he did not see or in any way accept offenses, but yet
I'm sorry. Could you repeat that, please?
Oh, okay. You had mentioned that Vamana did not accept in any way any offenses that may have been there by King Bali, but yet we have to be careful. To avoid offenses. So there seems to be some contradiction there.
We shouldn't take this. The fact that Krishna is very tolerant, we shouldn't take advantage of that. We should certainly avoid offenses. But actually, just like the essence of worship of Krishna is the desire to please him. And the essence of aparada is the desire to displease him, or simply being neglectful. That means our desire to please him is not really there. Even if we're neglectful, that can be an offense. And what to speak if we're directly malicious toward Krishna. So what I understand from this, if a devotee deliberately makes a mistake, not deliberately, sorry, if a devotee, because a devotee doesn't deliberately make mistakes in worship, but if in the course of one's devotional service, one deliberately neglects to do something which should be done, or one has an improper attitude, just like I heard a devotee. Actually, I don't want to repeat it. I heard a devotee say such a thing. I shouldn't repeat it. So they may say something which is directly offensive, and a devotee doesn't do that. But if by mistake, for instance, there's some oversight or forgets to do something, just like sometimes it happens in the you may be singing, leading a kirtan, for instance, Gurvashtaka in the Mangalarti, and you leave out a verse. So that's a mistake. That could be said. It's aparad, means it's not properly done, but because the intention is not to offend Krishna, but one has made, it's an involuntarily or an unknown mistake, so Krishna overlooks that. So that's my understanding of this. But if we think, I want too much to sing all this, and I just forget it, and then that becomes offensive. So it's very much in the attitude. That's my understanding. Anyone else want to discuss that some more?
I guess, well, maybe there's the point that that Krishna is so kind and merciful that Krishna may not accept their offenses, but the big problem, maybe we'll discuss this as Radhasami is coming up, that Radharani, that she will accept, and therefore...
Well,
because
generally think she's more compassionate. Radharani is more compassionate. I often, when you see devotees have Gaunitai deities and they don't really serve them very much, and they say that, well, you know, Gaunitai are very merciful. And my response to that is, well, that's true, but the devotees of Gaunitai may not allow you to get anywhere near them. The devotees of Gaunitai don't to neglect them. If you have deities, you should serve them well and properly. So this idea that the Lord is very merciful, so we don't need to bother to serve him properly, that is an offensive attitude. So, yeah, that's the point. Same point you made.
There are circumstances, Dandavats Maharaj, Vidugda Madhava Das here from Hawaii.
Sorry, who?
Vidugda Madhava Das. We met in Sustanthia.
Vidugda Madhava. Right, yeah.
So,
learned Madhava.
There are circumstances in every situation, including offenses. So that makes, you know, each situation unique. And Krishna, being independent, he can choose, you know, according to the circumstances. And he knows the heart of everyone. He can decide what he'll accept and what he won't. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's I will tell him Krishna is the arbiter.
Right.
There may be so many rules written, but ultimately it's up to Krishna. Krishna's not bound by any rules.
One part of that pastime that struck me once when I was reading it was that when Bali, you know, he had rejected his spiritual master, Sukracharya, because Sukracharya was trying to get him to break his vow, to tell a lie or somehow get out of it, giving Vamanadeva 3 steps. But after Vamanadeva took the second step and told Bali Maharaj, "I've just taken everything. So now what? We got another step." And I heard that his wife came to Bali and whispered in his ear or told him, you know, instead of, "Oh, that's great. You just lost everything. What about us and the kids?" You know? She comes and she tells him, "You still have your body. You can offer your head at his feet." Hello?
That's there in Bhagavatam, that Shukra says that to Bali before he gives away everything. That's Sarva Svang Vishnave Dattva Mudho Vati Asi Katam. Shukra says that if you fool, if you give everything to Vishnu, then how will you maintain yourself? And Prabhupada comments that Shukra's thinking, he's thinking, how will I maintain my, because Shukra's depending on Bali. So that may be also, that the wife also. What's her name? Vindhyavali? The wife of, the wife of Bali Maharaj. So but we find that in the Bhagavatam it's described, it may be described a little differently in the different Puranas, that Brahma came and he was about to say something, but the wife of Bali, she was just all so flustered that she interrupted Brahma. And Brahma came and she just interrupted him. And she said that I should have opened it on this Leela in the Veda base, but she said that you see, someone's a fool if they think they own everything. So she was supporting the position of Vishnu, actually.
She was elevated. She's not a, she wasn't a gross materialist. She was a little elevated.
Yeah, his wife is Bali Maharaj. Yeah, here we are. I've got it. Vrindavan. This is from the 8th canto, chapter 22, beginning text 19. Translation. Bali Maharaj's chaste wife, afraid and aggrieved at seeing her husband arrested, immediately offered obeisances to Lord Vamanadeva, who pinned her. She folded her hands and spoke as follows. Purport. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Although Lord Brahma was speaking, he had to stop for a while. She interrupted him. Because Bali Maharaj's wife, Vindhyavali, was very agitated and afraid, wanted to say something. So she says, Srimati Vindhyavali said, O my Lord, you have created the entire universe for the enjoyment of your personal pastimes, but foolish, unintelligent men have claimed proprietorship for material enjoyment, referring to her husband. Certainly they are shameless agnostics. Falsely claim editorship, they think that they can give charity and enjoy. In such a condition, what good can they do for you while the independent creator, maintainer, and annihilator of this universe? Skipping the purport. Oh, yeah, it's quite a long purport. So it may be in some other Purana that she said that she told Bali Maharaj to put her, or in one of the commentaries of the Acharyas, she told Bali to offer his head.
You don't see it in Bhagavatam. The part where it may have been suggested that he do that.
I'm just looking through this now, but I don't believe that's there in the Bhagavatam.
Okay, go ahead. I'll look for it too.
Yeah, okay. Or maybe that's... maybe that after he gave his head. Yeah, it seems like Vindhyavali spoke after. Yeah, okay. All right, then, anything else? Hare Krishna?
Anything else for those? We have quite a few devotees here. Hanuman Prashant Swami was actually here for most of the class, and he must have just had to leave. Anyone else have a question about all these wonderful names of Lord Vishnu, or a question for Maharaj?
Well, this is Dasarath here in Arizona. Maharaj, you... Hare Krishna, you have 1,000 names of Lord Vishnu. You plan to go through every one.
Well, now I've been through 154, so Krishna willing, I can go through the remaining 846. It's not actually exactly 1,000. It's a bit less, just like there are many temples in South India where they have halls of 1,000 pillars, but they're usually 1,000. It's usually a bit less. I believe it's 920 names. Anyway, you please bless me. It's a standard thing it's a fairly common thing in South India especially. I guess it used to be in North India also for pundits to comment on the 1,000 names. Of course, not all in one sitting by any means, but in the course of several months usually.
Also, a question about Also a question about where is your base, Maharaj? Where do you have a base, or are you only traveling?
Just any one place, but I spend most of the year in India, and between Gujarat and South India, and then South India mostly in Tamil Nadu and Andhra Pradesh. So not really based anywhere, just moving around.
It was a little curious, Maharaj, you mentioned that some of the names, the 1,000 names, were repeated. Now, Krishna being Ananta Rupa,
yeah,
with inconceivable, unlimited expansions that are ever increasing. It's a little curious that some are repeated. Why might that have been?
Well, one of the commentators, which is the main commentator I'm drawing from, that's Parashara Bhatta, the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya. His commentary was made a few hundred years ago. He links all the names, not just the ones that are repeated, but he sees that they're the names which are contiguous with each other, they all relate to each other. Just like this morning in Dallas here, I spoke on Vijaya, victory, and Jeta, which means the conqueror, and the name before that is Anagha, which means sinless. So how we can relate that although he conquers over others, he doesn't do so in a manner that is causing distress or that is sinful. Everything he does is sinless. So like that, he relates the names all. If there's a name which comes more than once, then you can see how that name is appearing in relation to other names which are just close to it. Just like the next name is Prangshtu, which means very tall. So that is stated in relation to Vamana when he does become very tall. So like that. It's an ocean of bliss. There is so much. So beautiful prayers. It's Vedanta Deshika. He made 1,000 prayers, 1,000 verses, glorifying the shoes of Lord Vishnu. So we have lots of, just for, we have so much nectar. We have so much nectar. So much nectar. Prabhupada has introduced us to this great culture.
Maharaj, is the Vishnu Sahasranam from the Mahabharata?
There are several. The most famous one, or recited one, is from Mahabharata, yes. There's also, I believe, maybe one Purana, maybe Brahmanda Purana, like that. That's Bhishma Dev. When Yudhishthira asked him, what is the best means of attaining all desirable goals, then Bhishma answered by chanting the names of Vishnu, and he chanted these names himself. He taught them to you. And he ended it all, or it's recited at the end of Vishnu Sahasranam, that's recited, that one verse. It's still there are some Brahmins, especially in South India, who regularly recite Vishnu Sahasranam, even daily. So that name is recited, that verse is recited in the at the end. What is that? Rama Rama Eti Rama Eti Rame Rama Mano Rame Sahasranam Achulya. This Rama Nama Varaname. This is a verse spoken by Lord Shiva to his wife, who says that Rama, I'm always chanting the name Rama. It's very pleasing to the mind, and chanting this name, Rama, is equivalent to chanting the whole 1,000 names of Vishnu. So you may say, then why chant the names of Vishnu? Why? Because that also helps us to understand more about who he is. What are his qualities? What are his pastimes? it's a great meditation on his forms, names, qualities, pastimes, and although we're very tiny little living beings, but by his mercy, the mercy of his devotees, we can understand more of him and be attracted more and more to him. Krishna is all attractive, that's the meaning of his name. What is it about him that makes him attractive? And there's unlimited features and facets of his personality that are attractive, and many of them are covered in Vishnu Sahasranama. That's my understanding.
I have a question that's kind of off the subject. What does your name mean, Bhakti Vikash?
Vikasha, well, if it's spelled with sh in the name, that means like prakasha, which means effulgence, light, manifestation, or vikasa, that means expansion or development.
Well, thank you, Maharaj, for your association.
Thank you so much to all of
I have something. Maharaj, if somebody wants to hear your lectures for the other names of Vishnu, what's your website where they can hear those lectures?
Well, right now they're being broadcast for the next few days from Dallas, but that's a bit of, you'd have to get up in the middle of the night to hear those. I have a website, ks.com. Then they're posted a bit after they're recorded and then posted again a little later. After they're not always broadcast live, but they come up. Some should be up there already. Did you see? Some should be up there already. But I generally do one or two names. No, usually two or three in one session. Sometimes more. Sometimes one, or sometimes the best of them in one session. So if I've done now, I've done two. 154 names, so there'd probably be about 50 lectures on this. So if you have a lot of patience and you'd like to hear all these things, you can listen. I personally find it a very great meditation. I have to prepare these lectures in advance. It's not the kind of thing you can ad lib through. You have to prepare. So then I have to look up different things, and it's a very absorbing meditation on the quality that person who we totally belong to and we totally want to give ourselves to, because that's what we're supposed to do, and that's the source of all welfare and happiness for us and for him. We want him to be happy with us by our giving ourselves to him, although we belong to him. So it's a very sweet meditation. So we're finished.
May I ask the last question?
Yes, please.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Dr. Luciano. I was wondering, Bhishma gave this 1,000 names of Vishnu on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Why would not Bhishma just say, ask Krishna, because Krishna was present there? Or
Krishna was personally present there while he was reciting these names, and Krishna was standing right in front of him. This is the time after the battle when Bhishma Dev was lying on the bed of arrows like a hedgehog. So yes, Krishna could have said, no doubt, but that was that's described in Bhagavatam, in the Prabhupada's commentary, that Krishna, even he had attempted to console Yudhishthira in Yudhishthira's grief at having been the cause of the Kurukshetra battle, or perceiving himself as the cause. So Krishna, he wants to give the credit to his devotee and make his devotee seem more capable than himself. Just like I remember one time, I was addressing a group of lawyers in India, and one at the end, one one of the lawyers asked me that, how come Hanuman jumped over the sea to Lanka and Ram had to build a bridge? And the way he, it was like he's got me chained. He's thought he'd really got me there. But I said that, well, Ram very kindly wants to give credit to his devotees and show them as greater than him. So a look of enlightenment came on his face. Krishna makes his devotees look bigger than him, greater than him. Just like he learned all Vedic knowledge from Sandipani Muni, as if he didn't know. So the knowledge that everything Bhishma spoke, it's all coming from Krishna, but Krishna made Bhishma the channel by which that knowledge can be broadcast to the world. And although Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita in glorification of himself, there are many, many more narrations by his devotees about Krishna, which is suitable, because it's suitable that he glorify Krishna. He can also glorify himself. But Bhishma, by reciting Vishnu Sahasranam, taught that we should all do that. All the devotees, they should recite the names of Krishna and meditate on his qualities. So that's my answer to that. If anyone else has any other insights, they could offer them.
Thank you, Maharaj.
So then we'll finish, huh?